Really excited to be joined by our next guest, CJ Moore. He is one of the top college basketball writers. He does fantastic work with The Athletic. He got the opportunity to sit down with Darren Peterson. CJ, man, happy to have you on the show today, my man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. Take us through this. Was this an easy thing to set up? Was this a difficult thing to set up? There's been a lot of conversation around the people around Darren Peterson. You obviously had to communicate with them to get this set up. What was the process like to be able to sit down with him?
I didn't actually sit down with him. I just got him in the locker room, man. Like, I've been trying for a month to get with him, and he just hasn't been doing any one-on-one stuff, but open locker room in the Big 12 tournament, and finally was able to get him talking, and he shared what he shared.
One argument that I have made this year is I think he should have done this a long time ago. The point that I made is he should have sat down to do the Taylor Rooks interview back in December. He should have sat down with Malika Andrews or had Stephen A. Smith come to Lawrence, Kansas to talk about the things that he was dealing with. I think a big misstep in all of this is I think it's been poorly communicated. I think it's been poorly communicated by him. I think it's been poorly communicated by Kansas. I also think it's been poorly communicated by the adults around Darren Peterson. I think there's been a lot of miscommunication here.
Yeah, I do think if he had had this conversation with somebody in the last couple months ago, before this all blew up, I agree that it would have, people would have had empathy for him and kind of what he'd gone through. And, this was just kind of the bare bones of it. But I think it at least gives people an understanding of what his season's been like and the struggle he's gone through.
How confident are you in him as we are heading into March? Because we were having this conversation earlier. I'm sure by now you've seen it. Andy Katz had his top 10 players in March Madness. Darren Peterson was not on the list. And the point that I made is, at some point with Darren Peterson, we got to talk about how he is playing and not how we think he is going to play. Since the start of February, he is shooting 37% from the field. He is shooting 33% from three. He's shooting 40% from two-point land. So he's not really efficient really anywhere on the floor right now. He only has 17 assists in their last 11 games as well. How confident are you in Darren Peterson to just get things going? Because I'm looking at the rest of college basketball and I'm seeing these freshmen just have incredible year. I'm seeing Cam Boozer. I'm seeing Darius Acuff. I'm seeing AJ DeBansta. Darren Peterson, just he's not playing at the same level as those guys right now.
Yeah, I think what he needs is time and they're running out of it. And I think if there was maybe another month of the season, maybe we would see have the full Darren Peterson experience and see what he was like last summer, see what he was like in the fall before this all started happening. But it's almost like he needs a month's rest and then needs to just ramp it up and get in really great shape and get back to his old self. Like, I think part of it's been conditioning from all the stops and the starts and not having, being in great shape and being able to really just press on the gas and go. And, there's been glimpses, like he was great in the K-State game, but you could probably go out and get a couple buckets against the Cats right now. And, but he was really, really good in that game. He was making his floaters. He was making his shots. I think he needs a little confidence and like maybe a first round game against a smaller school. Maybe he really goes off and he gets a good one, but, right now he's if you go back and watch, like, I've got the games on Synergy from his high school, and like, it's high school competition, but he's playing high level high school teams that have guys that are going to play D1 basketball right now. And there's a different pop. There's a different kind of explosion in that tape than what you see now. And I think if he were able to somehow, maybe this week off is good for him and he starts to get his legs, then maybe we can see that. But until then, I just think he's kind of limited right now in what he can do.
You talk to scouts at all level. You and I have watched high school basketball games together. You watch as much college basketball as anybody. You talk to NBA people. Is he still going to go number one overall? Has that now been AJ DeBansta? It feels like the Darius Acuff conversation has really kind of come out of nowhere, I would say, over the last 2 weeks, where now people are saying that he could potentially go over Darren Peterson. What are you hearing from NBA people as we are winding down the college basketball season and we're about to start getting into the NBA draft portion?
I think a lot is going to depend on his medicals. I think a lot is going to depend on his workouts and how he's looking in a couple months. Like, they don't have to draft right now. They get a draft in June. So I think it's still a conversation. I think there's still some people that have seen Darren Peterson at his best and can't shake that and still believe, you know, he could probably get back to that at some point. But AJ DeMonson, the way he's been playing, has obviously elevated his stock. And, you know, I think if you were to poll most teams right now, like, I think it'd be a majority AJ, but I do think there's still people that are scared of, like, passing on Peterson and what he can be.
Right now, we're talking to CJ Moore. He writes for The Athletic and the New York Times. He recently talked to Darren Peterson, getting ready for March Madness, getting ready for the NCAA tournament. How are you feeling about Kansas heading into this? I'm not worried about Cal Baptist. I'm sure they had a great season. Mm-hmm. I made this point yesterday. We had Ken Palmer on the show, and I told him, I've watched way too much Bill Self basketball for me to think that a team whose best player is fine is about to beat Kansas. I'm just not buying it. I'm just not believing it. I think Kansas handles Cal Baptist in the first round. They could be going up against St. John's in the second round. That is a much tougher kind of team. How are you feeling about Kansas heading into March?
No, I mean, not great was what I just watched over at the T-Mobile. I think that, you know, a lot's going to depend on their defense. They have to be a team that can play in transition. When they get stops and they get some, you know, force some turnovers and able to force some long misses, they're really, really, really good team in transition. But when you can slow the game down and force them to play in the half court, then it's tough. So, like, St. John's is not a great shooting team. You know, maybe they're able to get them to, you know, miss a bunch of jumpers and they can get out and run a little bit. Teams that I think are really, really big inside have been able to give Kansas problems. St. John's does start three bigs, but they're not, like, huge. Like, Bryce Hopkins is 6'7", Zubi Ejiofor, people know him from Kansas. You know, he's like 6'8", 6'9". So it's not like they're a gigantic team, even though they do start three big kids across the front line. If they can force them to miss a bunch of jumpers, they'll have a shot in that game. But the like toughness and grit that St. John's plays with right now, you know, kind of, it's, if you had to compare St. John's to a Big 12 team, it's Houston, and we just saw what that looked like.
That's kind of what I've been thinking as well. I'm not surprised that Kansas lost to Houston. Houston's a great program, a great team. I was surprised that Kansas got punked in that way, and I was just surprised that they got beat up. We were talking about this on Monday. Rob's a season ticket holder, alum of Kansas, loves Kansas basketball. I asked him if Kansas is tough enough. There is a measure of toughness that you need to be able to navigate this tournament, and Kansas's toughness should. I think St. John's is going to win their first round matchup against Northern Iowa. Their toughness is going to get tested very early on in this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, it so much depends on which Bryson Tiller is going to show up. And, you know, can Melvin Council get any kind of confidence back? And, you know, they need Darren Peterson to go out and, like, be a dude. So we'll see. It's, you know, there's been glimpses, there's been moments, there's been first halves where he's been really, really good. Since he's been playing full games, these last seven games, like you said, he hasn't, you know, he hasn't been terrific. So he's put up points. The K-State game, obviously, he was awesome. The TCU game, the Big 12 tournament, he wasn't super efficient, but he got to the free throw line. So, you know, a lot's going to depend on him and Bryson Tiller, I think, and how far they go.
Right now, we're talking to CJ Moore of The Athletic here, talking a little bit of March Madness. Let's move over to Missouri's side of the brackets. This feels very, very simple to me. This seems like a very easy pass or fail for Missouri. If Missouri wins this game, then their season is a success. If they lose this game, I know they made the tournament. It ain't that hard to make the NCAA tournament, not in a Power Four school. I think a lot of people will look at this season as being a failure, especially given they lost their last four games and they essentially lost a home game against Miami.
Yeah, I guess I'm right there with you. I don't know. Like, it depends how you judge things, but they're playing a very, very similar opponent, I think, in Miami, in terms of, like, both play through a big lefty that, like, have to have good games from those guys. But yeah, Missouri's, it was a really, really bad start to the season. Credit to Dennis Gates that he got it turned around. I think it's just been kind of you know, whatever season. So yeah, you're probably right that, like, they get to the second round, they win a game, probably feel a lot better about themselves than if they lose it.
You've seen these recruits that Missouri has. You've seen Jason Crow play. You've also seen Tony Bryant. I've not got the chance to see either one of those guys play in person. What are they like?
I don't think I've seen Tony Bryant, but I have seen Jason Crow. Incredible score. Like, you know, the one question I have with him is, can he make other people better? Because, like, when I watched him, you know, he was getting his, right? Like, he was going to get it up. He's got great range on his jumper. Lefty, so he's, you know, they're just, lefties are just more smooth. But I'm very curious to see him in like a college setting where he's not getting all the shots and, you know, can he make other guys better? But he is a talent.
Right now, we're talking to CJ Moore here for a couple more minutes, talking a little bit of college basketball. So for this question, we're going to remove the mid-majors. I'll talk to you about the mid-majors in a separate point. Give me a handful of teams that you think are overvalued heading into the tournament from the big schools, from the Power Four. Give me a couple of teams that you think are undervalued that you think can make a run to the second weekend from the power schools. So overrated, underrated.
All right. Well, the Big East wasn't great this year, and UConn didn't dominate it. You know, it's hard betting against Hurley and what he's been able to do in the tournament, but I could see UCLA knocking UConn off in the second round. So that's one for the overrated for you, I guess. Houston, you know, while I think I super respect Kelvin Sampson, I think they're a tremendous program. They've done an awesome job. They are going to get a play the second weekend in Houston. But I believe they're 2-5 against KenPom top 20 teams. Like, they just haven't beat good teams this year, for what they did against Kansas. But is Kansas really a good team? This is a conversation right now, I guess. So Houston might be one I would say that I think, you know, I've heard a lot of people pick them as a national title team or Final Four team. Some underrated teams, you know, South Florida's gets to play Louisville, who is missing their best player, Mykel Brown. I think that's definitely an upset pick. Possible VCU getting to play North Carolina without Caleb Wilson. VCU's big kid is really, really good. Those are a few. You know, it's what's interesting is that, like, you look at this, you look at these last two years, and there's such a separation between the high majors and the mid majors. And I just don't see, like, many mid majors, if any, getting to the second weekend, because that's just where the sport is right now.
I was just going to ask you, is there a mid-major that you like? I actually like VCU in their first round matchup against North Carolina. That's probably my upset for the first round of this. Is there a mid-major team that you like heading into this tournament?
You know, nobody that, like, I love getting to the second weekend. I think the team that might have the most realistic path might be Akron, because they get Texas Tech without JT Toppin, and then they get Alabama likely without the little guard that just got in trouble that used to be at Auburn. His name's blanking on me right now. Aiden Holloway. So, you know, they get those two teams possibly without two of their best players. Akron, I do think, was the best team in the MAC. John Gross used to be the coach at Illinois. You know, he's been in these tournaments before. Yeah, I remember when he had Ohio in 2012, and I think they made the Sweet 16. If I remember, that was the year Kansas made the title game, and they might have been in wherever that was. That in St. Louis? I can't remember. But John Gross, good coach. That's a good team. I think they probably have the best path to a Sweet 16 of a mid-major team.
A lot of people forget the name of the weed, man, so it's okay, CJ. That happens from time that happens from time to time. I'll get you out of here with this last question about Miami of Ohio. I kind of feel like this is where the run ends. They made the NCAA tournament. They're playing by far and away the best team that they're going to play this season. They've kind of been leaking oil the last couple of weeks. I think all that kind of comes to a head today, and I actually think they get handled by SMU.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. Boobie Miller, if you haven't watched him this year, they haven't seen a dude like that all year. They got a big kid in size. I'm not even gonna try to say his name, because it's you know, go look it up and see. I want the pronunciation from you, C-Dot. See if you can pronounce that. But
you're not about to get me in trouble. Hell no.
He's gonna eat tonight. So I would go with SMU, but I'd love to see Miami of Ohio win and you know, keep that story going. But you're right, they haven't played anybody nearly as good as they'll see tonight.
That is our guy CJ Moore joining us on the show. He does fantastic work for The Athletic. CJ, man, great stuff, man. We'll catch up with you down the line in the tournament.
All right, thanks, dude.
Absolutely. That is CJ Moore joining us on the show today. Rob, can you look this up? Because I'm just curious what the answer is. The most games that a Missouri player has played in the NCAA tournament is 7. There are a handful of players that are tied. Melvin Booker, Javon Crudup, Kareem Rush, Arthur Johnson, etc. Can you look up what the highest number of games in the NCAA tournament is for a Kansas player?
Yeah, I can probably.
I'm just curious what the number is. If it's 7 at Missouri, I'm genuinely curious. I also would like to know who has the record. Who do you think has the record while you look this up? Leitner. Like, who would you guess?
Leitner.
I'm talking at Kansas, not all time.
Yeah, they're saying all time.
No, I'm talking at the University of Kansas. Yeah. I'm guessing Christian Leitner played in the most tournament games, too. At Kansas, who do you think it is?
The answer might be Sherron Collins. Oh, he had an early exit, but you got to think of a guy who had a title run. That would get you 6 right off the bat. So Collins has 6. Honestly, you know what the answer might be because college basketball is broken? The answer might be Mitch Lightfoot. Mitch Lightfoot was at Kansas for 6 years and made the NCAA tournament every single season.
That's a good one.
And he played in a national title game.
Mitch Lightfoot is the answer?
It might be the answer.
You got to put his name in the rafters then if that's the case. He has the most tournament wins. Look it up. I'm genuinely curious now that we are talking about it. I would love to know who has played in the most NCAA tournament games in a Kansas basketball uniform. We will find this answer out together. Let me play for you guys what Max Crosby had to say here as we switch gears just a little bit. Max Crosby had another podcast. Here he is telling the story about what happened at Baltimore.
I didn't get to see the GM at all. I thought I was going to see him when I first got there. I didn't see him for 5 hours. And I don't know why. I'm not going to speculate. I didn't see him one time. I even asked the girl. I was like, where's Eric at? Like, I want to say, like, you know what I mean? Like, he just made the trade. Like, I didn't see him for 5 hours. So I go and do my thing. At the end, they're like, yeah, I'll take you up. Joe was like, I'll take you up and you go see the head coach, whatever, just before you leave. I was like, hell yeah. I was like, that's what I want to say what's up to him. So I went back up and, I dap him up, and I could just tell, like, the energy was a little bit off. And the GM was standing, like, the hall, like, in the room next to me to the right. And that was the first time I seen him. And, you know, I'm just in my head, like, this is a whirlwind. Like, I'm so excited, like, fired up, you know what I mean? Like, this is a new opportunity, whatever. And you could just tell the energy was off. Like, I dapped him up. He had, like, a blank face. And I'm like, okay. I'm not thinking anything of it. Maybe he's just different. I don't know. I don't know him, whatever. Yeah. I go into the room. They sit me down on the couch, and he's like, man, I don't know how to say this, but, you know, one of our doctors has concerns with, you know, with the results and whatever, and, like, with your knee, like, some of them have, you know, are concerned about the future and da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, we really want you, and this is what it is, but, you know, we're just going to have to get more and more opinions. I was like, the first thought in my head, like, I was terrified, because I'm thinking in my head, like, what the f***?
Yeah, man, the Ravens are they run a real shady business over there, man. Real shady business. I mean, you've been in a situation where you realize that the vibes were off. We all have been in that scenario. Like, you walk into a room and you start to look around and just, hey, man, something feel off. They were doing a lot of nonsense behind the scenes is what was going on. No, you read it correctly, Max. They were thinking of a lie. They were working on some things. They then came back and they probably did paper, rock, scissors to try to figure out who was going to tell you. No, this is real nasty work from the Baltimore Ravens. I am actively rooting against Baltimore this season because of this. You can't be it. You shouldn't be allowed to do this. They violated the code. There's a code. There's a way of doing things. There's a right way and a wrong way. And the Ravens did the wrong way. The football gods can't reward that. They can't. It's impossible. It's impossible that the football gods can reward that.
By the way, it is Mitch Lightfoot. 17 games in the NCAA tournament.
17, you said?
He's one of the top 10 of all time in games played, with 167 college basketball games played. He played in 17 NCAA tournament games.
17. Who was second? Behind Mitch.
DeJuan Harris.
Oh, he was in school for a long time too. Yeah.
COVID year, guys, really.
For sure. But Mitch is one. DeJuan's at what, like 15?
It's like 13, 14. Okay. But Mitch Lightfoot was on the final 14 that lost to Villanova and the national title team.
Oh, so he was on two teams so that made a run. Okay. All right. I was curious. Shout out to Mitch Lightfoot. What do you think Mitch Lightfoot is doing right now? Like, if we Googled Mitch Lightfoot, I'm sure he has a LinkedIn. What do you think he does right now?
You know, what's surprising is I see him very rarely at KU games. He should be living at KU games. He should go there forever. Podcast. I think he had a podcast at one point. He can't be playing basketball still, so I don't know what he's doing.
No, he is. he is not doing that. He is still at school. I'm looking at it right now. He is getting his master's right now. I am on his LinkedIn, and he does work for the Williams Education Fund.
Oh, so he's at KU, but not like is, they don't waive. They don't wait. He didn't waive and get a moment. He's working.
Yeah, that's. I'm looking at the right now. Mitchell Lightfoot still lives in Lawrence. He does some fine work for the Williams Education Fund. He has his bachelor's degree in economics, and he is going to get his master's. So congratulations to old Mitch Lightfoot.
He was in school for 12 years, and he still didn't have his master's yet?
I'm just telling you. I don't know. I'm on his LinkedIn. I'm reading it to you. I don't know. I don't know what he's got going on. I'm just telling you what it says, what Mitchell Lightfoot has going on in his life. Shout out to him. Shout out to Mitch. Your guy. That's your guy, right?
I mean, he was on Kansas, and I liked Kansas. Does that make him my guy?
That absolutely makes him your guy.
17 tournament games is crazy.
Did he play in all 17 of those?
I mean, you have to have your game log register, and you played. You have to have checked in.
You have to check into the game. Okay. Shout out to. How many points would you guess that Mitch Lightfoot scored in those 17? Mitch Lightfoot played in 17 games and has 41 points in the NCAA tournament. That would be my guess. Coming up on the other side, if you missed it, we were joined earlier today by Daniel Jeremiah. We're going to play the best of that conversation. I think that Daniel Jeremiah is the absolute best NFL draft voice that is out there. I want you guys to hear what he has to say about pass rush. I want you guys to hear what he has to say about wide receiver. He also right now on his mock draft has the Chiefs taking an offensive tackle with the 9th overall pick. A lot to get his thoughts on. We'll do that for you next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
All right, I got an update. Rob, I've now located Mitch Lightfoot. A text came in. Mitch Lightfoot does not work for the Williams Education Fund. He plays basketball in Japan. He plays for the, I believe you pronounce it, Kumamoto Vultures. I believe that's the team that he is on. He also recently had a daughter. So salute to Mitch Lightfoot. Rob, we have figured out where Mitch Lightfoot is, who has played in the most NCAA tournament games wearing a Kansas uniform with 17. Shout out to Mitch Lightfoot.
I can't get over 17 to so many tournament games. Just so many.
You also just got to be in school for a long time play in 17, too.
And he's to make multiple Final Fours, which he did because he was in school for so long.
For sure. What do you think, not just I'm so interested in Mitch Lightfoot, what do you think Mitch Lightfoot's career high is? Like, what's the most points you think Mitch scored in a basketball game at Kansas?
12 to 16.
All right, let's look it up. Let's look it up out of curiosity. Now I'm curious, before we get to Daniel Jeremiah, I want to learn more about Mitch. How much you said?
12 or 14.
Oh, 15 was his career high. He scored 15 in a conference tournament. Did that against TCU. Yeah, hooping. Gatum boys 15-5 with a couple assists. Yeah, 15 points was his career high. Shout out to Mitch Lightfoot, man. We all learned something a little bit today. We are better people for the last 3 minutes of the show. We have learned more about Mitch Lightfoot. Congratulations to him, who recently had a daughter. Earlier today, we were joined by Daniel Jeremiah. Daniel Jeremiah, in my opinion, is the number one person when it comes to the NFL draft. We started our conversation with him wondering, how big of a deal is the arm length thing with Reuben Bain? Everybody keeps talking about it. He is a draft scout. He is a draft analyst. How concerning is it?
Yeah, a couple things. Yeah, it's real. It's a conversation. And I said it at the combine on the broadcast about this is real. There's a reason why people care about arm length. And it's not just your ability to escape and get off blocks. It's your ability to finish, you know, once you get to the quarterback and things like that. So it's a real concern. Now, the other side of it is the arm length measurements were jacked up at the combine this year. They were different. They were significantly different in some cases from the Senior Bowl, as well as, you know, the spring stuff that teams had. So everybody's going to do their own measurements with these guys. So the numbers that you see reported out of the combine, I don't know that everybody's taking those as the gospel, is what I'm getting at there. So it is what it is. It's going to be a factor. It's something they're going to discuss. But I think the combination of his arms actually being a little bit longer than they were measured in reality, and the fact that his tape is so good, I can only see him dropping so far.
Right now, we're talking to Daniel Jeremiah going through the NFL draft. Let's move over to wide receiver. It seems like there's going to be three in the range for Kansas City with Carnell Tate, Ty Lemon, and also Jordan Tyson. How do you handicap those three, and maybe more specifically directed towards the Chiefs? Which one of those three guys do you think really rounds out their wide receiver room?
Well, I think they're all, you know, good options there, and I would throw Omar Cooper Jr. in that mix as well. But, you know, to me, Carnell Tate, I'm guessing, is probably going to be gone. But he's someone, I know he ran 4.53, but teams had him a little faster than that. He plays faster than that. He gave him some size and the ability to win as a 50-50 ball winner down the field. You know, vertical stretch to go along with someone who's just got an overall toughness that you love. Mekhi Lemon would probably be the one that fits best for me, just because, you know, they've been a run after catch operation there. He does that extremely well. He catches everything. I think as Kelce starts to phase out, you want somebody that's instinctive, that can find soft spots and just has a really good feel and sees things the way the quarterback sees things. I think that's a strength of Mekhi Lemon. So he would probably be my favorite fit in with that group. And then, you know, Jordan Tyson is as gifted as anybody. The durability stuff bothered me. You know, every year he's dealt with something. He wasn't healthy enough to do what he needed to do at the combine. Didn't do anything there. So, you know, that's just in the first round, picking that high up, I feel a little more comfortable about somebody that I can rely on. And it, you know, it's a real thing. You know, everybody say, oh, it's just the talent. Well, it doesn't matter. If you're not available, that's a problem. And it's been a consistent problem throughout his career. So I acknowledge him as a great player. You know, someone who's worthy of going all the way up there. To me, there's just a little bit of the durability risk associated with it.
Daniel, in your most recent mock draft, you had Spencer Fano, the offensive tackle from Utah. You had him going 9 overall to the Chiefs. A lot of Chiefs fans were mad about that, and I get it. They want
a lot.
Splash.
How about all of them? Yeah. I think all of them were.
I mean, I was trying to make the case for right tackle. You know, I'm a sports talk radio host. Sometimes you got to argue the other side. I want them to go wide receiver or pass rush, but I don't think that right tackle is a terrible thing to do. You are obviously plugged in. You're hearing this. You didn't just randomly create right tackle as a need for the Kansas City Chiefs. Why do you think he makes sense at 9 for Kansas City?
Well, we'll start first of all with the pass rusher side of that thing, because this is what is funny to me about mock drafts. We need a pass rusher. I'm like, well, okay, well, in this mock draft, the top three guys are gone. So are you going to, do you want to take Mezidor? You want to take Mezidor with the 9th pick? Because to me, that's the next guy. I like him, but that coffee seems a little bit rich to me. And then, okay, receiver. Yeah, I get the receiver thing, but there's going to be a lot of value in receivers that you can get, you know, littered throughout this draft. And then I look at it, and I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I don't think Jalen Moore's very good. So to me, that's a concern. And I know there was an investment made there, but I'm not a believer. So to me, I think that Fano is a major upgrade over him at right tackle. I think that's that's having worked with Andy Reid and knowing what the importance he places on that on the offensive line. I think you got to be honest about things and say, do you think he's good enough? And I also go back to, I've been in the draft room when Andy Reid's talked about his connection with coaches in college and how that has carried a lot of weight with him, you know, whether it was with, you know, your relationship with Sark, and, you know, we had a player we took in Philadelphia higher than we had him graded because he put a lot of stock and value into Sark's opinion there. And I know the connection with Whittingham and the fact his son's on the staff as well. I think he's going to get a very glowing report on Spencer Fano, and I think he's a better player than the guy they have playing right tackle. So that's why I went there.
The argument that I made on the show is, and I'm curious if you agree or disagree, is for 3 years, I heard people say, hey, you got to protect the quarterback. You got $1 billion invested in your quarterback. You got to protect the quarterback. The logic to me with right tackle is, We have our left and our right tackle, we feel like, for the next 10 years. We've got our center for the next 10 years. We also have invested heavily in right guard. This is a move to me that if the Chiefs went right tackle, this would be them trying to build the best offensive line in the National Football League. That's not terrible logic to me. That's not terrible value, especially in, as you have in your mock drafts, if that pass rusher is not there, if Carnell Tate isn't there. I'd rather have the best right tackle than have Caleb Downs just off positional value. That was the argument that I made on the show yesterday.
Yeah, and the other argument I would make is, look, where they're picking right now, they're in all likelihood not going to be picking here. They haven't picked here in a long time. I don't anticipate they're going to be picking up here anytime soon. And if you look at around the league and you look at starting tackles, the vast majority of them are first round picks. That's a shallow pool each and every year, and they always go higher than you think. So if you're planning on picking in the bottom of the first round for the next 6 years, you're not going to see a player this talented at that point in time. Last year was an anomaly because Josh Simmons had, you know, he had health stuff. There was, you know, other concerns involved there. Talent-wise, he was more talented than, you know, where he was picked. But that you can't count on that going forward. So to me, it was an opportunity for them to get an outstanding talent at that position, knowing full well that you're probably not going to be picking in this range anytime soon.
I'll get you out of here with this last thing. When you look at the 2022 Chiefs draft, I mean, it's just loaded with starters. And that draft was very foundational in this organization continuing to win Super Bowls. When you look at where the Chiefs select, when you look at their needs, what are the things that you are saying to yourself as somebody who does mock drafts? They have to come out of the draft with this thing. What are those things that you feel they have to go find in this year's draft?
Well, you know, to me, it's continuing to replace the secondary. They had some good pieces in place, you know, that allowed them, you know, to make the McDuffie trade, to let Cook walk away. You bring in Aloy Gilman. I like him, have been around him when he's with the Chargers, a solid player. But I think continuing to build that out, I'm a believer in Noel Williams. You know, they've got some good pieces there. But building that secondary out is part of it. To me, along that defensive front, you know, I'd like to see him continue to add some big guys as down players. If you can mix in a pass rusher, would be high on my list. So, you know, continue to throw resources at that on the defensive side of the ball. If you come out of this draft with an edge rusher you feel good about, you've added one to two good pieces to that secondary. Those would be probably the three spots I would love to, you know, be able to check those boxes once the draft is over. And there's still plenty of ammunition outside that to address the receiver position and maybe even eventually find Kelce's replacement. So they've got a to-do list that's a little bit longer, but you know, in terms of the secondary, this is a team and a secondary coach, and Dave Merritt's as good as it gets.
That was Daniel Jeremiah joining us on the show earlier today. If you want to hear the full interview, be sure to go check it out on the podcast page. A special shout out to Daniel Jeremiah. I think he is the absolute best when it comes to the NFL draft. Coming up on the other side, I got a question to ask you about the Royals. I got a question to ask you about the Chiefs. I have melted them together. Keep it right here, Mr. Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison and Rob Brenton.
You losers is what you are.
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5, The Fan.
All right. We are actually getting off an hour early today. Bank is going to come in. We are heading out to the Papa Shot tournament. So, coming up later today, we are having our first ever Papa Shot tournament. Get started at 6:30. If you're in the Papa Shot tournament, I tell you to get there around 6. We'll be there. We'll be watching the first four. They got a bunch of other games out there. If you want to lose to me in NBA Jam, I'm sure I can accommodate. If you would like to lose to me in NFL Blitz, I also feel like I can accommodate that as well in between beating you in Papa Shot. So we're going to be out there. The winner gets $200 to DraftCade into the Funny Bone. We will be at the DraftCade in Zona Rosa coming up in a few hours. All right, Rob, before we get out of here, I have a Royals topic and a Chiefs topic that I would like to smash together. As I was watching the World Baseball Classic, and I was watching Mikel Garcia have a phenomenal WBC, and we have spent a lot of time talking about the Chiefs roster and where it is, I was wondering, there was a time where I think the answer was a clear yes. Right now on the Chiefs, who is their version of Mikel Garcia? Who would you say is their Mikel Garcia? Because I actually don't know if they have one right now. Like, if you think about the last 12 months and kind of where you are with him and what he's kind of turned himself into, I mean, a career year last year. He hit 286, 16 home runs, 74 RBIs. He turned himself into an all-star player and is a gold glove player now at this stage in his career. And just given what we just saw him do at the WBC, you think that there is another gear for Mikel Garcia. Like, he can continue to improve and get better. He's 26 years old. Do they have a Mikel Garcia currently on the Kansas City Chiefs?
No, but how much that's because every time they get one, they trade him. Like, Trent McDuffie would have been that guy, right?
I agree.
25-year-old. I know the draft is different than international pathway, whatever. They had that guy. They traded him. Rashee Rice could have been that guy, but he all sorts of problems. Xavier Worthy could have been that guy. Just hasn't been the player they anticipated. Like, I think the closest thing to what Mikel Garcia is to Royals is Nick Bolton, maybe, but even then, I think he's aged out of what Mikel Garcia is.
I think this is a good point. What if the answer is Kenneth Walker?
Does that count because they brought him in as opposed to finding him? Like, that's part of the equation here with, I got to get used to it, Mikel Garcia. Is the Royals
I don't know
found
what it is. I don't know how to pronounce it. Hold on, let's hear it again. Let's hear it together. I want to pronounce his name correctly. So this is what he said yesterday. Hold on, let's listen. Let's listen.
It's not Mikel, it's
Mikel.
I still don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to just keep calling him Mikel Garcia. That's what I'm going to keep calling the man. That's his name to me. So you're saying Kenneth Walker cannot be the answer because the Chiefs didn't draft him?
Correct.
Because I would say he fits in this. He is a 25-year-old, very productive, potential superstar player. I think he certainly would fit. You're saying it has to be a homegrown talent the way that Garcia is a homegrown talent.
Correct.
And they don't have that. I would also say, isn't it a problem that no one right now on the text line is saying George Karlaftis?
That is a problem.
That also, to me, explains how we got to this point with the defensive line. It explains to me how I ask you, I mean, it's not like Mikel Garcia is something, he's not a superstar player. He's a really, really good player that every team in Major League Baseball would be thrilled to have. Look at what he did last year. I mean, that's a really good player, who he was last year. A guy that hits 250, a guy that can steal bases, a guy that can hit home runs, a guy that drives in runs. That guy fits every single team. It is crazy to me, just looking at it, there is not a person right now that thinks that that is what George Karlaftis is. That they don't have the 25-year-old, 26-year-old, potential all-star, next up, still ascending kind of player. Because the people are saying, oh, that's what Xavier Worthy is. Maybe. That's not what he's been so far in his first 2 years. I don't think you can say that with Josh Simmons after he played 8 games last year. I don't think that's what he is. Now, they can develop this. But if you want to talk about why the Chiefs have holes in some of the spots on their team, where these holes come from, that is why. There was a time there that we would have had 5-6 different answers about who it was, and that's exactly who they had. They had the 23, 24-year-old ascending, look at the nucleus of talent that they've built, just solid foundation. They don't really have that right now.
I also think, and I don't want to get too in the weeds the analogy, because I do think the analogy is good. Several people are saying in that what Creed Humphrey is. Mikel Garcia plays a more important position in baseball than Creed Humphrey plays in football. Like, Garcia is ascending, we believe, already has a gold glove, was a very productive player last year, and we think there's more there at third base. Creed Humphrey is those things, but center just doesn't carry the same value in football that third base carries in baseball. So, the answer would have been Trent McDuffie, but he's now the answer for the Rams. The Rams have their answer. He's Trent McDuffie.
Yeah, no, I was throwing that out there. Text line 913-586-7965. Somebody said George Karlaftis has been a year away from being a year away for the last 3 years. I actually think that is a very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very accurate representation of who I think George Karlaftis has been.
Can you say that same thing about Rashee Rice? He's been a healthy year away from or he's been an off-the-field issue, no off-the-field issue year away from, because we did our top five, our blind ranking AFC West receivers yesterday. A lot of people were in my mentions talking about, well, if Rice hadn't done this, or Rice hadn't done that, or Rice hadn't been hurt like this, he would have been something. Isn't that same, he's just blank away from being special, account for Rashee Rice too?
I agree. That's why, I mean, it's always unfortunate. Let me choose my words correctly here. It is extremely unfortunate that another off-the-field incident, this is the year we should be talking about Rashee Rice is healthy. He is far enough removed from the ACL, and he is heading into, like, we should be having this is a career year conversation about Rashee Rice. So it is frustrating that, once again, it feels very difficult to have those career year conversations because, once again, there is a cloud over Rashee Rice. There was the injury cloud that football happened, and then it was the cloud of his own poor decisions continue to happen as well. So I'm with you. I mean, it would be great if that player was Rashee Rice, 25 years old, heading into a very important career year in which you can make yourself a lot of money, but he just can't seem to get out of his own way.
I mean, when I heard that, I guess read it, saw the texter, then you said George Karlaftis is a year away from being a year away. Man, the Chiefs have a lot of that player. Hey, he's productive, but he's a year away from being wow. And to date, they have not hit wow. Because at this time a year ago, I bet you most people would have said Xavier Worthy's about to ascend. He could have been a Michael Garcia at this point last year. He did not ascend. He regressed. So the Chiefs have candidates. They just don't have a known commodity the way the Royals do with Garcia.
Yeah, I would agree. To me, the Chiefs, there's about, I would say the Chiefs are counting on like five players for this upcoming season that could very well take that next step. They're really counting on Ashton Gelati. They are really counting on Omar Norman Lott. They are really counting on Noel Williams. Like, there's a group of these guys who have been drafted over the last couple of drafts that now you should be given the opportunity to play. I mean, at corner, the snaps are there for Noel Williams. If he ain't on the field, that is an indictment on something because they don't really have a room right now. When it comes to pass rush for Ashton Gelati, like, your mindset this offseason should be, I'm ready to go. Hey, this job can be mine. You don't need to outsource this to somebody else. I'm ready to take that next step. So, yeah, there is definitely a group of, I would say, about four or five guys who are probably somewhere in that 22 to 24 range that you think have a chance of being a good player, kind of like Garcia was. I mean, I'm looking at him right now in 2023. He hit 275. He stole 25 bases. He had 50 RBIs. You know, you were hopeful that he could turn into the guy that he's turned into. I mean, Garcia has improved in each of his three seasons, I would say. Every year, he's gotten a little bit better. He stole 37 bases in his second year. He had 58 RBIs, just doing a little bit, took more walks, more patient at the plate. And then last year, at 25 years old, he took a substantial step forward. Played in 160 games, 16 home runs, 74 RBIs, 20 stolen bases, hit 280. And heading into the season has really, I think, given you reasons to feel very optimistic about the kind of player and prospect that he is. All right, so I am signing off. Binkley is going to come in. He's going to do the 5 o'clock hour. We are heading out to DraftCade for our first ever Papa Shot tournament. Hope to see you there. Keep it right here on 96.5 The Fan.